Hey everyone, this is Melissa, and I'm the talkative introvert. Welcome back to the podcast. If you're new here, thanks so much for checking out the pod. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and decide to keep listening. If you do, please spread the word, share it with your friends and family, and rate and review the podcast. So for today's episode, I am joined by Susan Jane, aka The Intuitist. She is the host of the Voice of Intuition podcast, where she talks about the practical aspects of intuition and how it guides you towards your very best life. She is also a published author, inspirational speaker, intuitive life coach, and a multi-international award winner. So thank you, Susan, so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me on board, Melissa. This is really cool.
Yeah. So I kind of already know this answer, but I ask all my guests this question. Are you an introvert, extrovert, or somewhere in the middle, an ambivert?
Okay. Funnily enough, I talk about that in my book too. And when I'm doing intuitive work, it's very, very important to have a clear understanding of where you are. I tend to go on the side of introvert more than extrovert. And that's because of where I get my energy. When I want more energy, I tend to go inwards and become more introverted. But I think a lot of people would say I am the ambiverted version because I can be extroverted when I need to. However, where I get my energy is definitely introverted.
Yeah, I think a lot of introverts in general can turn on that extrovert switch when they need to, especially when it comes to like work and, you know, different like events that they need to attend.
Yes, and I think it's where you're comfortable too. And when you're comfortable to stand up and speak and do what you need to do, you can look like you're very confident and very extroverted when the reality is it's where I get my energy. It's like, no, I need that space and that time. So I'm definitely more on the introverted scale.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I usually ask my audience because it is interesting because sometimes you don't think someone is an introvert or an extrovert. People are just so good at turning on that switch or like adapting to the situation. Like my coworker, I was talking to him and he was asking me what I'm doing on the weekend. I said, I don't really do anything. Like I'm pretty introverted. And he was really shocked about that because I'm just very talkative and I like talking to my coworkers, hence the podcast.
Yeah, I think people can get confused about that because I remember somebody saying to me, oh, no, you're definitely extroverted. And I thought, wow, I don't feel extroverted. And when I looked deeper into it, I thought to myself, no, I'm very confident because I'm in close-knit friends and family and I don't, you know, I can be myself and I don't need to worry about things like that. However, when it comes to being out there in the public, no, I'm definitely more introverted. I like my space. It's not, I don't like people, but I like my space. And like you, and then I can see, because we've got a video here, I can see that you working from home and that's where your space is. I love my office. This is where I am 24/7 almost. No, not 24/7, but this is where I am a lot of the time. And I really like it. I love being able to talk to people on videos and on the podcast, but having my space and having my own area is really, really important, especially to introverts. They do need to have that.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I do. I work from home and I do my podcast at home and a lot of my hobbies are in this room that you're seeing, the audience isn't seeing. But yeah, my life is like all around here. So I did mention earlier that you call yourself the intuitist. So do you want to kind of explain that a little bit? Like, how did you get that name and, you know, why do you go by that?
When you look at the intuitist, well, I'll put it this way. The mentalist deals with our thoughts and our thinking. The intuitist looks more at our impressions and our feelings. So it's how we're receiving that information, that intuitive information. So we're not thinking about it. We're receiving it, but it's how we're receiving it and how we're getting the understanding of it. So that's why I call myself the intuitist. It's like, that's what I like playing with, your impressions and your feelings. Oh, and the difference that I have too, Melissa, for feelings and emotions is slightly different, because feelings are internal and emotions are the external side of it. So energy, emotion is like our emotions. And when we see emotions or when we're experiencing these emotions, you're often putting it out externally. So that's that extroverted side of it. When we're feeling it, it's more of that internal aspect of it. So we don't necessarily, we can feel these emotions or we can feel these feelings, but we don't have to actually act on them and create an emotion from them. We don't have to actually have that motion happening with it. We can feel it, acknowledge it, and allow it to go. Or we can feel it, acknowledge it, and act on it, and then it becomes an external emotion. Okay, that's weird, I know, but you know what I mean.
And I'm trying to wrap my mind about it, because I don't really talk about intuition, or, you know, it's not really something that comes up in conversation. And so I was trying to figure out, like, what is intuition? And I was trying to Google it, but I feel like you probably do a better job at explaining what exactly is intuition. Cause I thought at first it's like a response to our emotions, but maybe that's incorrect. I'm not sure.
Well, that's part of it. Yes, for sure. All right, let me go back to like the beginning. So what is intuition is people ask me that all the time. How I explain it, I can do the quick, simple version. Intuition is the messages, the communication between our spiritual side and our physical side. So as soon as I say that, which is quite the simple version, that's like, how do you drive a car? You get in and you steer it, you know, like really simple, but we know it's a lot more technical than that. So the simple version is that side of it. The first thing you need to look at is, do you believe that we have a spiritual side and a physical side? Because they're the two aspects you look at. And through my experiences and what I have gone through in my life, I can 100% guarantee that we do have a spirit side and a physical side. Now, the spirit side, obviously, that we don't see it. And if you think about it, how does that spirit side that does not have the connection of the five physical senses that the physical body does, how do they communicate? How do they put things across? How do they talk to each other? And when I look at the spiritual side, I tend to refer it as my soul. Now, other people can refer it to a lot of other things, but I tend to refer it to my soul. And with my experiences, I'm not actually sure how long your podcast goes for, Melissa. I should have asked you that earlier. I don't know if I've got time to talk about those.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Just wasn't sure. Okay. So when I was 19, I remember as a going into primary school, I can remember once I was coming home and I said to my older sister, I said, wow, Mum's in a bad mood today. And she looked at me and she sort of said, how do you know that? Because we'd only just left school. We hadn't got anywhere near and we walked home. So we weren't near Mum. And I remember looking at her and thinking, how do you not know that? Because I used to be able to feel all that sort of thing quite easily. So we've got home from school and Mum's in a bad mood. So I knew Mum was in a bad mood, but I didn't know what PMS was or anything like that. So I could pick up the energy, but didn't have an understanding to it. So, of course, when we got home, my sister blamed me that Mum was in a bad mood because I called it. So it taught me to stop calling it. So I stopped acknowledging or saying how I was feeling or what I was experiencing or those impressions that I was getting. When I was 19, I went on a holiday with my younger sister and we went two states away from where I lived. During that holiday, she had gone back to the unit. I was heading back to the unit and I was tapped on the shoulder and turned around and I was king hit where I was knocked out onto the ground, hit the pavement and came to being dragged into the back of a car by my hair. During this episode, I was pack raped in the back of this car. But while it was happening, I remember thinking to myself, okay, I can't stop what these people are doing. Every time I tried to vocalize or fight back, I was hit again or knocked around again. So I stopped doing that. But I remember thinking, okay, I can't stop them doing this to me, whatever they're going to do. But can I stop them doing it to somebody else? And in an instant, I left my body. Now, when I talk about this situation, I talk about it as if it is the third person, because I can remember standing there looking down at her, and I call it her or she because it didn't feel like me. And I remember looking, and you could see the energy coming out of the side of her face, where she'd been punched. You could see it coming out as energy, but you couldn't feel it. You know, I could see the blood running down the side of her lip, but I couldn't taste it. And I remember when I was in the car, you could smell the alcohol and the cigarettes where they've been driving around the car for a long time. But I could no longer smell that. I could no longer have those senses. And in fact, when you leave your body, when you have these sort of out-of-body experiences, there is no emotional attachment to the body. And this is a really big, big part of it. So when we talk about emotions and feelings and things like that, we often feel that they're coming from our intuition, from our spirit, from our soul, when in fact there isn't any connection there. However, the spirit side of us, our soul, does use emotions or feelings as part of the messages trying to get across. It's like pressing the right buttons. So this happened when I'd left my body, and I got the answer that I was asking about, how can I stop them doing this again? And then I'm back into the body. Now, when you've come back into the body, everything hits you all at once. So the feelings, the pain in the back of the hair where you could see the blood coming out from the being pulled into a car by your hair, it was just being ripped out by the handful. You could see the issues that were going on down below where they were just very brutal and very attacking. You could see all this, but you felt it all as you come back into the body. And as you feel it all, everything comes back at once, and it was really quite horrific. So this had happened. Now, when this had happened to me, I swore never ever to talk about the situation unless I could talk about it in a positive way. That was just how I dealt with it. And this is where an introvert will deal with it. We will go in rather than talk about it. So I've gone in and I've let it go. And one of the main things was, Melissa, that I had no idea what went on. I knew what went on, but I had no idea what it meant. It was just stupid, crazy, weird, you know. So I'm trying to deal with all this being pack raped and attacked and, you know, being feeling so bad. And then this weird shit happened in between. Oh, can I say shit? Sorry.
Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry. So
this weird stuff was happening, and it's like, oh my God, I just didn't know what to do with it. So my way of working with it was to just close down. That's it. Just close it down. When you get an understanding of it, then you can talk about it. 12 months to the day of that attack, I was at work and I worked in a bank and I passed out and I had a near-death experience. Now, majority of people say, oh, you've just passed out. That's not a near-death experience. But I know if you can imagine you're laying on the ground and you've got all your workers looking over you and then you stood up, all your workers would look, or your staff members and stuff that would watch you stand up. I stood up and nobody watched me stand up. And I can remember thinking, looking around going, I'm here. Why are you still looking down? And then I had this near-death experience. And I know it was a near-death experience. Well, I know 10 years later I knew it was a near-death experience. Again, another situation where I refused to talk about it. The doctor gave me an adrenaline shot. We had doctors next door to the bank, gave me an adrenaline shot, got my heart working again and brought me back. But it wasn't until 10 or so years later when I started reading books, and I read a book about a near-death experiences. In this book, there was about five or six of them. And I remember thinking, oh, that happened to me. Oh, that happened to me. And I was looking at the different experiences. So I didn't experience all the same as what, you know, each person did, but little snippets out of each one. And it wasn't until then that I realized it was a near-death experience that I had, because I did travel. I did see my memories. I did see a lot of things, and I was told, what are you doing here? Get back, you know, and it was almost like laughing at me because you're not supposed to be here. So that sort of happened then. That was 12 months later. So I had these two experiences that I wasn't going to talk about. 10 years later, I've started to get an understanding of what's going on. So I'd read this book about near-death experience. A couple of years later, I'd read a book about astral traveling. Now, astral traveling is where the spirit, the soul, can leave the body. It stays attached, but it leaves the body and can move around. This is when I go, okay, I'm a theory tester too. I like to test these theories. If you reckon that's what it is, I'm going to have a go at it. And it took me probably, I think it was about 4 months. But after 4 months, I actually had an astral travel experience. I was so excited. I got to the driveway and I know I was flying, like you were above the ground. And it was just, everything was very surreal. It's like a bright full moon. It's dark, but it's bright blue. And I'm heading down the driveway and I was so excited. As soon as you put any emotion into it, straight away, you're back in the body because emotions are a part of the body, not part of the soul. So straight away, I'm back in my body. But it was that time that I realized exactly what the situation was about. I realized then we have those two parts of us. Now, I've heard it many times, but until I really felt it or I got the understanding of it, it was just knowledge, if that makes sense, not experience. And so now I've sort of got this really clear understanding that, okay, we've got that spirit side of us, my soul side, and we've got the physical side. The physical side comes through with all that DNA, all the culture, all the environmental aspects. We've got all that learning and that understanding in that physical side. And then we've got this spiritual side, and this is where they look at eternal life because the spirit continues and continues and continues. It's everlasting. So I had this understanding, and that's when I went, well, how on earth do they communicate? Because I know as a spirit I didn't have the energy, the emotion there. I didn't have, although you can see, you don't see in the same manner as what we are seeing. There's not that sense of touch. There's not that sense of taste. Everything's very different. Why has that spirit come into this body was one of the things I was asking, and that for me is to learn, because spirit doesn't have the ability to taste. Our soul doesn't have the ability to taste. It has to come into a physical body to get an understanding of taste, to get an understanding of what's going on. So then I went, well, how do they communicate? And that's when I started to really dig down into intuition, because that was my idea of how the spiritual side of us, that unseen side of us, can relate to our physical side. And that's why I went heavy into intuition, because I honestly believe our soul, our spirit there, has the answers, has the understanding, has the ability to help us, and is there for a reason. That's what our life purpose is about. So it's all about following that. Our physical body has a different context to it. So that was intuition for me. That was the scenic route to get to it. Like I said, the simple one is we've got a spirit, we've got our soul, and we've got our physical body, and intuition is how it communicates. And I have a little story, but I want you to say something first because I can see you're thinking. I have a little story about how that sort of works, a little analogy. And if you can imagine, the physical body is a car. The spirit side, the soul, is the driver. Now, we've got two different elements there that are trying to work. So the soul, or the driver of the car, has to press the right buttons, put the foot on the right pedals, steer it the right way. It has to do all of that to get the car to go from point A to point B. But we all know cars nowadays can park themselves, can almost drive themselves. They have a GPS to tell you where to go. So we've got all these elements there where the poor little spiritual driver is trying to get this car to go, and this car wants to go its own way to get to where it needs to go. That sort of gives you an understanding of how I see our spirit and our physical body.
Yeah, that's all really interesting. And yeah, I was trying to think about how they tie together. And that's a good analogy. But I also was thinking too, because there's a lot of people who consider themselves spiritual. And I understand like your story about shutting down and not wanting to share stuff. And I kind of come from a similar place. I'm still working on it now, that I do tend to not be so in touch with my emotions. I don't really like being vulnerable. I don't like, you know, like intense emotions. Like when my dad died, a lot of coworkers were actually really surprised that I came back to work so soon and that I was able to just like, you know, get back to it. But I think it's just, you know, I'm just still, and that was, you know, a few years ago. So I'm still trying to understand my emotions, and, you know, I've gone through a therapist to kind of figure that out, because it is something I'm not good with. And I'm sure it has to do with my like childhood, because, you know, everything deals with childhood trauma. But I do am kind of curious, because there are people who say that they're not religious, but they're spiritual. And previously I used to think those are like, you know, same thing, but I've learned that, you know, they're not the same thing. And so what does it really mean to be spiritual? Like, how does someone become more in tune with their spiritual side?
Ah, lovely question. Thank you. What I look at with religion and spirituality is I look at religion isn't usually an organized religion. So I look at that as it's the theory side of things. So it's the learning, it's the understanding, it's the theory side. A lot of religion has boundaries and restrictions ideology and different aspects like that. So I see religion or organized religion as the theory side of it. I see spirituality as the experiencing side of it. So you can be religious and know all the understanding of it and know all the theory behind it, but you may not be experiencing it. And we hear about a lot of those where you know of, you know, just an example could be that the man that goes to church every weekend and he, you know, talks to his congregation and everything else, but during the week he may be having affairs or he may be doing all those wrong things but hiding it. So I can see, and I'm sorry, I'm not everybody's like that in religion.
Right.
But there's a lot of people in religion that just sit in that religion area that need to have those boundaries and restrictions and things like that, because they struggle being outside of that. When we look at spirituality, there's not as many rules and regulations. And I see spirituality as more of the experiencing it. So people can be religious and spiritual, and people can be spiritual but not religious. And that's where I come in. I am very spiritual, but I don't follow a religious doctrine. I don't follow a religious organization. And that's sort of, that's really all I see it as. It's almost like, there's people there that go to university and they learn all about the university and all about study and all that theory, and they can tell you everything about it. But there's those that haven't had that learning experience, but they've done it, that training in theory, but they've actually learned it through experience. And so there you've got your, you know, the two different areas there. And we know that there's a lot of very high, well-to-do business people that may not have, you know, succeeded through college, but they've learned through the regular school, the school of the streets, and they've got an understanding that way. I see spirituality and religion exactly the same way. So the religion side is the learning, the training, that organized the structure. Spirituality is the actual experience of it. And we can often experience that in ways that are not in the normal religious connotation. Take, for example, the pack rape. I learned so much from that, even though it was a negative experience, but I learned so much about spirituality and about being connected with myself and who I am from that I would never have got in a religious area. Not for me, because I'm not that way inclined.
So would you say your spirit is, it's who you are? How do I explain this? It's a collection of all of your, you know, life experiences and how it's molded you into the person that you are.
Absolutely. So you're going to have, because your spirit is within you, your soul is within you, and I believe the soul is connected to God or a higher version or universal energy, whatever you want to call it. I don't like putting it down into names, but I believe my soul is connected to a greater good. So if I'm getting these intuitive messages from my soul, I naturally believe and assume, and I know I'm right, that they are of a positive nature. So I'm going to follow those, and that's where I see that spirituality side of it. I'm following my soul, my spirit. I'm not following a book or somebody else's doctrine. And that's sort of how I look at it. Was that the question you asked? Sorry, Melissa, I can't remember what the question was.
I forgot the question as well.
It's okay. Oh, that's okay. Cool. We'll move right along.
I have pretty bad short-term memory. And so that's why audience can see it, but I have like my little notebook and pen. So yeah, when I'm looking down, I'm not like on my phone or anything. I'm like taking notes. I can remember what I just said. Oh, I think I was just asking if your spirit is just a collection of all your experiences that molded you to be who you are now.
Yes. And if you can imagine, your spirit has, your soul has come from lots of other reincarnations, like lots of other people or physical bodies that they've gathered all that information. So what your soul is doing now is gathering the information of what you're experiencing, where you've come from, what you're doing, your culture, your environment. It's collecting all that information now in where you're living now. And that will take that information to the next body.
Yeah, that makes sense. So once someone's really like identified or, you know, realizing they have this soul, they have this spirit, how do they then use intuition to make their lives better and more, you know, fruitful?
Okay, so there's three elements we look at. There's two lots of three elements. So it's about connecting with your intuition, developing your intuition, and then trusting your intuition. So I look at it as asking, receiving, and actioning. So when we're connecting, it's all about asking. And when you're connecting with your intuition, there's different ways you can do it. You can do it through meditation. You can do it through deep, sincere prayer. You can do it through journaling. And I think you'll be good at journaling because you like the pen and paper. So there's lots of ways we can do it. And when we're asking, if you could imagine with a prayer, you're asking, please, please God, you know, can you do this or can you do that? When you're doing a meditation, you're acknowledging the fact that you're giving yourself that time and space to sit down and allow you to be you. So that's what meditation is a lot about too. So especially when you're doing a passive meditation. So you've got meditation. Journaling, when you're writing and writing and writing, it's all about just connecting with your spirit, because as you start to journal and write, you start to write things that you aren't aware of. And that's where your spirit is starting to come in. It's connecting with you, that soul of you is connecting and starting to help your hand move, help you, you know, just change those little brain waves a little bit. So you're starting to write something in particular, or little messages come in your head. So there's lots of ways we can ask. And the other way of asking and connecting, which I find really easy for people, is before you go to bed, sit by the side of your bed, and you don't need to pray. You can say a prayer if you want to. But I usually say, okay, I don't understand which way I need to go with this. Should I sell the house or should we stay here? I just need some sort of clarification, some sort of an answer. Then I'll go to bed. And during the night, you may have a dream, in which case try and write it down or try and remember it and then get an understanding of it. But often I'll get up because I do a morning walk, and then I go and have my shower, and it's when I have my shower, you get this aha moment. Oh, do this. And all of a sudden it starts to make sense. So the first part to connect with our intuition is like through meditation or journaling or deep sincere prayer, but also to ask. So when you go to journal, when you do a meditation, have some sort of a question. When you go to bed, have some sort of a question. And don't make it too hard, because it's going to be really challenging to receive that information, but make it sort of basic. Show me a sign. Show me a sign. I want to know if I should be doing this or doing that. Show me a sign. get an understanding of it. So that's the first part. The second part is developing your intuition, and that's also about receiving the information. So I've talked to you about having the aha moment in the shower, and it's then you acknowledging that you're receiving it. So if you wake up in the morning and you have had a dream, acknowledge that you have received it. That's about developing it. When you look down at your computer clock and you see 1, 2, 3, 4, the numbers, acknowledge that you've seen it. What does that what do those numbers mean? What does 11:11 mean when you see it all of a sudden? As you're going along the highway, you see a big billboard go past and it has some information on there that was just relevant to the question you were asking. Acknowledge it. You're receiving information. When you hear a song on the radio and you sort of go, oh, that reminds me of when I did this, you're receiving the information. I can remember one time I was with my partner and we were talking about something. I can't even remember what it was, but we were talking about something and we were driving along and all of a sudden he said, oh, did you see that billboard? It was about what we were talking about. And I've gone, oh, no, I didn't see it. But as we're going along a bit further along the highway, the radio was on. The guy was talking about basically what we were talking about. And I said, oh, did you hear that? That's, the, you know, there's another a moment that we were talking about. And he didn't hear it. So he saw, but I heard. And that's where you've got to have the understanding of the information that you're receiving. How are you receiving it? Even when you're doing a meditation, you're asking, but you could also receive the answer at the same time. When you're journaling, you're asking, but you can also receive the information at the same time. So we can have this instant download as well. But that's all about developing your intuition. When you start to develop it, you start to become aware of those messages that you're receiving. Other ways we receive messages too is through our chakras. You're aware of chakras? Mm-hmm. Yes, cool, because I don't like jumping ahead, but we can get them through our chakras. And we know the heart chakra, you know, when you watch a little girl and, you know, she's just loving her little brother or something like that in your heart, so you feel it in your heart chakra and you sort of, that's that energy coming through, that loving energy coming through. When you see somebody that you think, oh, they're a bit all right, wouldn't mind getting to know them, you could be feeling that in your base chakra because it's probably more of a sexual nature to start with. So we feel these different things as we go through. So that's the second step. So we've asked through connection, we have received through development, and then the last part is to trust, and that's when you have to action it. So you've received all this information, now you have to act on it. And one of the things that I remember very, very clearly is I had a deck of oracle cards. So using cards and things like that will help you as well. So I've shuffled this oracle card deck. Now there's 50-odd cards in there, and there's one yes and there was one no. All the rest were different, and you could bring in a yes or a no, but I wanted to make it really clear. And I'm shuffling the deck and I'm asking, okay, I need a yes, no answer. I don't want to be fluffed around with all these fluffy numbers. I want to yes or a no. And I'm shuffling the deck. And so I need to know the exact answer. I need the exact answer. And then I stopped, brought the first card over, and it was the yes card. Now, out of a deck of 50-odd cards, the chances of bringing out the yes one or the no one was pretty slim, and yet I brought this yes card out. That would naturally, you would say, okay, yes, action, what you need to do. But I didn't. So the action part, and I went, oh, bugger, later on, I must admit. But the action part is really about trusting you know, trusting those messages. And sometimes we have to trust them, and people go, oh, how do you know they're the right message? You don't. You've got to trust them and be mindful that you can have an expected outcome which may not be correct. And I'll give you an example on that one. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm talking all the time, Melissa, and you should be saying something, but I'll give you an example on this one. I went to uni when I was 48 years old. I decided I was going back to uni. Now, I wanted to do a bachelor's degree. I wanted to, you know, further my career and all the rest of it. So all these things started to fall into place. And I can remember saying to my girlfriend, it's meant to be, because all of a sudden I've got somebody to go into my business. I've got renters to go into my house. I've got this has happened, that's happened, and everything, all those little ducks all lined up. And I knew I was meant to go back to uni. And I was so excited. I did 3 years of uni, three part-time jobs. I finished in the top 5%. I paid my way all the way through. I was really excited. It was what I was supposed to do. But 6 months after I finished my uni degree, and it was a degree in public health, 6 months after I finished that degree, the government changed in Australia and wiped out all the jobs. So I had left my home. I had left my business. I'd left my three children who were older and they were doing their own thing to move like 3-4 hours away to study and live and study. And now I had nothing. I owed $30,000 for this course, for this degree, and there was no jobs, not a single job available. And that's when I sort of went, well, holy swear words. I've just done everything. It felt so right, but it's not right. And was I crazy? Was I thinking I was being, you know, following my intuition? And I wasn't. What it was all about was my expectation of what it was wrong. So I felt I was doing uni to do this course to become, you know, this whatever it was I was going to become, this public health person. The reality was I needed to do uni to learn how to use the internet, use computers, because I was going through that transition stage. I've written a book. I've learned how to structure. I've learned how to connect with people better. There were so many other elements to going to university that I needed to learn. All I was focused on was the reason why I was there, to get this degree. So when people sort of go, oh, I followed my intuition, it was wrong, I think they're looking at the expectation they had instead of what their soul needed to learn from it.
Oh, that's really interesting, because I remember thinking kind of a similar experience. Like, I went to college and I got my degree, but I didn't get the job that is tied to my degree. Instead, I got I'm in IT right now. And I was just thinking, like, why did I go through all of that? Why did I go through like all that hard work to end up somewhere I wasn't expecting to be? But now, like, I'm happy with my job. It's a good job. I'm able to work from home, which is amazing. Yes. And it took me a while to like kind of be grateful for my experience, and because, you know, it does cost a lot of money. As you said, like, college is very expensive, but I did get to learn a lot from it. And I made some really good friends, and, you know, like, if I didn't have that experience, I probably won't be in this job that I'm currently in anyways, because they still required you to have a degree regardless of what your major is. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite surprising. And if you start to reflect back, and being an introvert, we can reflect really easy. In fact, sometimes we have to pull ourselves back into the here and now, because we can reflect. But if you start to reflect back and like you've just done then, and go, well, what did I get out of it? Oh, wow, I met some really lovely people and they're my friends still. You know, oh, I learned how to do this. I learned how to do that. So, you know, you start to go, well, hang on. What was my soul saying? Because I went to uni to be able to reach more people, because I was doing one-on-one therapy work and I wanted to reach more people. And the crazy thing is, if I hadn't have done that uni, there's no way known I would have written a book. And there's probably no way known I would be doing podcasts. But look how many people I'm reaching now.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I think it really is just all about your perspective on things, and you can either go a positive route or a negative route. And in my opinion, you know, every experience, I think there is something positive, no matter how terrible the experience is. Like, you know, I want to thank you for sharing your story earlier, because that is a, you know, very traumatic event. But even though you did experience that, I feel like there was a lot of good that came out of it, because you learned about intuition, you learned about your spiritual side, and now you're reaching out to people and talking to them about it and, you know, reaching out to people who may have experienced the same thing.
Absolutely. Yep. Totally agree. And like I said, Melissa, I would refuse to talk about it until I could find a positive spin on it. And it doesn't take away the horrible stuff that happened. It doesn't take that away. But what it does is that I can reflect back on it now and go, wow, this happened and that happened. And yeah, it was really bad. But you know what? This was the good stuff that came out of it. And if we can do that in any way, shape or form with any of our negative experiences that we've had, then we are going to, we can overcome them. We can overcome them and look at them in a different light. And one of the things about leaving your body did for me was being able to look at things in a different way, in a different perspective, instead of looking at it only from one aspect. So really, really important.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's really great that you got the courage to talk about it. So I want to thank you for that. But I did also want to get to the flower reading. So for people, you know, for the audience, I did meet with Susan beforehand and we talked about flower readings and I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, what does that have to do with your intuition and your spiritual side? And so we did talk, right? So I picked a flower that really just makes me happy. And I remember in our little chat, you told me to just find a quiet time, a quiet space, and, you know, close your eyes and just imagine a flower that, you know, makes you happy, makes you feel good and makes you feel like full of light. And so I sent you a picture of a pink magnolia. And because that was like, when you told me that, when we were talking, that was automatically already the flower. But then like I sat down again, I was like, okay, is that really the flower? Or am I just, you know, thinking about it? Cause I do have it tattooed on my arm as well. So, it obviously means something to me. And I did, you know, take the time to sit down and just really imagine it in my head. And it still came out the same flower. And the picture I sent you, which I'll post on social media, it's kind of the exact flower, like the color and everything. And I know you can't see my tattoo, but I do have one that looks almost exactly like the picture. It even has like the pink stripe and everything.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you why, because flower reading is my tool of choice, and I call it my tool. It is the book I wrote. It's called Intuitive Flowers, Empowering Your Emotional Goals, and I look at flowers as our emotional goals. So that's sort of where I focus on, because I remember being at school and they said to you, oh, what at uni, we had to write down our SMART goals. So they were very, very analytical. And I went, you know, like, I just want to help people. Like, what sort of a SMART goal is that? And I remember thinking that it was more of an emotional goal. It's more of a feelings goal that I had. So that's what the flowers are. And that's what that was all about. Now, I use them as a tool. And what they do is, or what any of the cards or any of those sort of things do, is it gives you that analytical visual, and then it allows your intuition to come through and gives you understanding and guidance on it. But the best part about this is the fact that you have to pick the flower, not me. And flower images have about 16 different elements that we can look at. So I'm going to run through them a little bit with you. And you'll just have to have a look on social media to find out what the flower really looks like. But it's a beautiful, like you say, pink magnolia. Now, the first thing we look at when we're looking at flower readings is the format of the flower. So whether the format of the image, sorry, and that's all about our motivation. So if it's an upright, a portrait image, we look at it as more of a individual, something that's more individually focused. It's more of a go-getter attitude, more of a I am attitude. When we look at, and a positive aspect, when we look at images that are in the landscape, that's more of a negative aspect, but more of a community focused. And when we see it as a negative, it can often be that you see something in the community that you see as a negative and want to bring a positive turnaround to it. A lot of my images that I've done in my flower readings are of a negative nature, and that's because I see people that have been hurt or have been abused, and I want to put some change in there, so especially as a community. But with your flower, Melissa, it is definitely more of a portrait. It's actually almost a square looking at that image, but it is slightly portrait, which means it's more about the I am. It's all about you, and it is of a positive nature. So there's two ways to motivate people, as I said, negative and positive. What happens if you're in this particular situation and you've got a wall and you want to, and there's something else on the other side of the wall, you can't see what it is. A positive person will, or a positive motivation will go, I wonder what's on the other side. Let's have a look. And they'll pop over and have a look. A negative motivation is often, okay, well, this side of the wall is getting really grotty. We've got to do something about it. So I'm going to have a look and see if there's anything better on the other side. So it's just a different way of looking at it. And neither are right and neither are wrong. And sometimes we're just more motivated by negative situations than we are by positives. Yours is all positive, and that's perfect. I am not going to go into it too much because we've got with it, like I said, there's a heap in there. So I want to go straight into it. We'll look at the stem. Now, with the stem's all about your path and your journey to your happiness goal, because I'm going to call this your happiness goal. The stem is the path and the journey, and we can look at your stem, and it is very, very strong. It's very, very clear. It has got a few little buds and a few little areas coming off the side. I think they almost look like leaves coming through. Would you say that, Melissa? Would they be buds coming through or leaves?
They kind of look like buds.
They kind of look like buds. The one on the right looks like a leaf coming through. But we know the magnolia has the flowers first before the leaves, doesn't it? It always produces flowers and then the leaves come in after. So it could be leaves coming through. When we look at the flowers themselves, the petals and our goals, the leaves are our guides. So if you can imagine, the magnolia goes, okay, I'm going to get to where I need to be first. I'm going to have my goal. Then I'll let the guides come through. So it's a little bit of a, I'm going to do this, and then you'll get the support coming through. Okay, you'll get the guidance and you'll get the understanding once you get that goal happening. So with yours, your path and journey is pretty, it's straight, it's very strong, and it's very direct on this picture. So you're not going to have any troubles getting to your happiness goal. In fact, you may already be getting very close to it and you're not aware of it. Okay, with a happiness goal, it's not something that you get to and then you stay there. It's something that's continuously coming through. And then the other aspect we can look at too is how many flowers you've got in there. Now, you've got your one big flower goal, which is you and your happiness goal, but there's other flowers in the background down low. And that's suggesting that you've got these other goals happening down there in a more physical context that is helping you create that happiness goal. Okay, so we've got all these other areas coming through underneath. We can see them in the background. But I love that you haven't got the guides there. You haven't got somebody sort of saying to you, oh, try this or try that. You have got this. You don't need other people. You have got this. You know how to be happy. You don't need to have others to make you happy. So then we can go a bit further on. There's no calyx. There's no support that you need to go with there. There's no guides. We go straight into the big flower. Now, when we look at the flower, the shape of the flower is, once it's fully open, is relatively round. So we look at shapes as behaviours, which are masculine and feminine. So your goal is more of a feminine nature, so it's more nurturing, more that sort of side. That's the full goal, the happiness goal, which happiness goal for you to be happy is about being nurturing, is about being caring, is about that well and truly introverted type of a way when we're just sending love and energy straight out. However, when we look at your petals, they are very long and elongated. They're very, very masculine. Now, the petals are about attraction, how you attract the goal. If this was a business goal, it'd be about marketing. but because it's a happiness goal, it's about how you're attracting that happiness. Now, when we see these long masculine aspects of it, we're saying that, and they're cupped, so they're really catching you. It's going to be really lovely in that context, so because they're very cupped. But when we're looking at that, it means that to attract your goal, you need to put it out there. You need to be a little bit more direct. You don't want to be fluffy and fairy with it. You want to be, I want to be happy. I expect to be happy. I demand to be happy. And you're going to start to, or you need to look at things in a context that is, will I do that? If I do that, will that make me happy? Because this is about how to attract it. So if you can imagine, you love dancing. So if somebody said to you, do you want to go to a dance? You're going to say yes because you love dancing, okay? But if somebody said to you, oh, do you want to go to a car race? You sort of go, that's not really going to make me happy. It's going to make you happy, but it's not necessarily going to make me happy. You need to be more to the point and say, thanks for asking, but no thank you. And start to look at those things that do make you happy, because that's where you're going to find your happiness. You're going to find it within, and you are the one who has to say yes or no to it. All right? So because these are petals of attraction, remember that you're putting it out there. You're saying, I want my happiness. You're attracting it. So if you're going to the wrong space, you're not going to attract what it is you're looking for, and which is happiness. Then we can go into the colors. Now, usually when I go into the colors with people, I ask them to pick, because pink means something particular to me, but it may mean something different to you. So how do you see the color pink, Melissa?
How do I see the color pink?
Yeah. What does that make you feel? Colors are usually emotions.
Well, I guess looking at this flower, there's like different shades. And so the lighter pinks, I think of like, you know, joy and brightness and light, and it's very uplifting and lighthearted. And like the deeper pinks are more, it's like more about like strength and like resiliency and.
Wow, that's brilliant. Good girl. So you are intuitive. Everyone's intuitive, by the way. Okay. So, yes, I do see I see that depth of pink, because I see pink as very loving and very caring and very nurturing. And then that depth of pink is, if you can imagine, like people can be caring and nurturing and it can be a little bit superficial sometimes. Oh, there's someone there, and say you go past a homeless person and you can ignore them. You can throw in a bit of money into their tin, or you can actually go up to them and ask them how they're going. Is there anything I can do? You know, it's that depth of caring. And I see that deeper pink as that depth of caring that you've got. When you're looking at it as a flower image, the external parts is very white or very light, and then it comes into that depth, the deeper pink. So what I see with the light one, say you look at light as I see it as very, not simplistic, but very almost see-through. Like I'm not trying to hide anything. Like white is so beautiful and bright. This is who I am. I'm not trying to hide anything. It's all out there on show. So that's sort of what you're putting out there. But as people get to know you, they can see, and you're bringing those petals back down into that deeper pink, they can see your true, deep, caring nature. And that is, when you was talking about it earlier and you sort of go, oh, you don't like to put your feelings out there and you don't like to have those emotions out there, you don't need to, because as people get to know you, the happiness part of it is they will see that. They will follow those deep pink lines that you can see in your magnolia and follow it down to your heart, and you can see that nurturing depth of caring as you go down. It's quite amazing and quite strong.
That's interesting. Now I kind of want to ask my friends if they think that, because my husband was just talking about this the other day or the other week, and like I said, I can be kind of robotic, like, you know, not in tune with my emotions, and I can be kind of cold and distant sometimes. And but I care about people and I care about like making sure that I spend time with them and that I reach out to them. And we call it friendship points because so in video games, I don't know if you play video games, but in video games, there's games where you can build relationships with different characters. And so, yeah. You know, behind the scenes, you don't see it, but they're called friendship points. And, you know, different characters, the more you interact with them, more you give them gifts and stuff, they gain friendship points. So I use that in real life that, you know, I try to maintain those friendship points with people by making sure I spend time with them, even though I'm tired or I am very introverted. I like being alone, spending time by myself or with my husband. I make sure that I make a point to at least reach out to somebody or call or, you know, text them. Or, you know, I try to make sure I see my mom as much as possible or, you know, when I can, even though like I'd rather be home, you know, because I do care about keeping that relationship and making sure it's still there.
Yes. Yeah. And people will see that because that's those thin, deep pink lines that take you down into it, down into your heart area. It's, they will see that, but also you also have to be mindful too, that your friends need to do the same back. You know, and they may not be able to do it as much as they would like to do it. And you might not be able to do it as much as you like to do it. But we've got to get that happy medium. And if it becomes too much, then it's not going to be beneficial for either of you or any of you. So, you know, I look at this flower and even looking at this flower again, magnolia, it's standing up there. It is so big and bold and bright. It's so extroverted that with your happiness, I'm saying to you now, and I know you're introverted, but with your happiness, I'm saying you need to be a little bit more extroverted. Now, how you take on extrovert and how other people will take it on will be different, but I see it as more about saying, wow, that makes me happy. That's being extroverted. You're saying it out loud. And you're acknowledging it to other people. What will happen then? And one of the things that I always did as an introvert, I never gave my opinion, never gave my, you know, oh, I like that or I don't like that. I was taught not to. But an extrovert will turn around and go, oh, no, I don't like that. I would prefer to have a green one. And they're happy to say that. Whereas an introvert will go, oh no, I'll just take it. You know, whatever. I want you to stand up and say it a little bit more. That makes me happy. Or, oh, I don't know whether that's going to make me happy. And acknowledge it, put it out there, because the more you say it, the more your friends will get that understanding and will come to the party. So, for example, you like to be at home and they want to go to a movie. Well, what if you turn around and go, well, listen, I'm going to put on some popcorn. I'm going to move the chairs around. We'll have a movie at home and then we can just enjoy both the movie and being at home. And when you do that and they agree to that and that all happens, then you acknowledge and say, wow, that makes me so happy. I just love doing that with my friends and being at home. That's the extroverted side of it that I want you to start to vocalize a little bit more about what makes you happy.
That's interesting because my friends do have a hard time figuring out what I like or like not what I like, but like what I want for my birthday, for example, you know, and I don't really, I guess I'm not super vocal about what I like. And, you know, like when we pick out a restaurant, I'm usually like, well, what do you want? Like, what are you craving? And, you know, I always ask them to make a list of, you know, your top three or whatever. And then I'll just pick out of that list instead of just, you know, saying like what I want.
Yes. I think you need to step up a little bit more and let people know. Well, look, one of the other things is I know I do the same. It's like I need to buy something for my daughter and I sort of go, oh, just tell me what you want and I'll buy it because I'm just not sure. And she has learned not to say it because I taught her not to say it. So I'm trying to change that around and sort of I'm trying to say when I go shopping with my daughter or daughters or whatever, I'm trying to say, you know, they say, oh, do you like this, Mum? Oh, yeah, that's okay. I'm now saying, I like the color of it, but I don't know whether that would suit me. And I'm verbalizing it a little bit more because I know how lovely it is to buy somebody a gift that they really like. And yet I'm not giving my family the opportunity to purchase something for me, if they want to, that I'm going to really like.
I guess for me too, so I come from a very extroverted family and just, not to generalize, but Filipinos are just pretty extroverted.
Yes.
And some of the problems I have is that I do notice when people like something. Like, I love giving gifts to people, and I love trying to remember what people like and making sure I remember that so that I can get that for them, you know, when the time comes for their birthday or whatever. People don't always reciprocate, you know, like there's some people, for example, there's some people in my family, I won't name names, but it does make me wonder, like, do they actually know me, or we just spend time together, but they don't like really deeply know who I am as a person. Like sometimes there's people who are surprised, when my husband says I like to play video games, and like they're like, "Oh, really? You like to play video games?" And I was like, "Yeah, like I've played video games since I was like, you know, 8 years old or something. It's nothing new." But sometimes people don't take the time to ask, and when they don't ask, it's kind of awkward or like out of place for me to be like, "Oh, I like this and that." You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of the problems I have sometimes with people.
Yeah, yeah. And I absolutely get that because I have a lot of extroverts in my family too. And so it does sort of, you've got to get to the stage where you sort of feel like you have to compete to get your voice heard. But in the same token, it doesn't feel right to do that either. So you tend to pull back as well. But I'm just saying, for your happiness flower, I think you just need to be a little bit more verbal on what you like. So even if it was like you've just had a video game and you've thrashed them, or you've achieved a certain level, even if you turn around and say it to somebody, "Oh, I was really excited because I played this and I got to this level." Now, I know that doesn't mean anything to you, but I just needed to share that. There you go. You're done.
I'll try.
Well, if you want your happiness goal, that's what your intuition is telling you. Remember, you picked this flower. It wasn't me and it wasn't a random card. You chose that flower because it means something to you.
Right.
Yeah. And the other aspect, if we've got quick time, the other aspect I'll say is too, the magnolia has a very big heart center. So that's also saying something. Now, the thing is with this image, we can't see the heart center in it, so it's not showing. There's some flower images you obviously will see the center. This one you can't. So this isn't necessarily about having that drive. You don't need that, you know, that passion and that drive to achieve your happiness goal. You just need to do it. You just need to do it. So they don't, like, some people need to have a lot of drive and a lot of passion. You know, they've got to be really pumped and moving to get it. With your happiness goal, it's not about that. It's about acknowledging it, understanding it, feeling it, you know, and having it out there. But your biggest thing, your biggest takeaway on this one is being more verbal with it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean,
it doesn't just necessarily be verbal, because some people like to just jump up and down, but that's probably more of an extrovert. But I think you can start with just being more verbal on it and just going, "Oh, I really like that."
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the whole reason why I started this podcast is because I am soft-spoken and not everyone always hears me or listens to me. So I wanted to take advantage of this platform where I get to talk as much as I want, whenever I want, and about whatever I want.
Yes, perfect. And maybe that's what that is too, because you enjoy doing it, don't you? That makes you happy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still doing it. I'm like in season 3 right now. And, you know, someone asked me like, what keeps you going and why do you keep doing the podcast? Because I don't make money out of it. And I don't have like hundreds of downloads, and I just really enjoy it. I have a lot to say. I'm very opinionated, and I love talking to people who have like great things to talk about as well, and having, you know, conversations with people. And, you know, this, like, I know we're both introverted, but having this conversation doesn't necessarily drain me as much as like going to a party. And then, yeah. And then with doing these kinds of conversations, I get to learn so much more as well. And not only do I get to like talk and share my thoughts and my feelings and my opinions, but then I get to actually learn something from other people as well.
Absolutely. And the biggest takeaway there is that you don't feel drained. I mean, just going to a shopping center drains me. It just seems to suck out all your energy. So yes, but I love the podcast too, because yeah, you don't feel it. I feel more enlightened. I just feel more alive after I've had an interview, or after I've either hosted one or been in one. So it's really lovely.
Yeah. And it's great, because most of the people, at least that I've met, actually listen to me as well, because this is a conversation, you know? And even though technically I'm interviewing you, we're still having this back and forth. And that's what I really appreciate. Like, there's someone who wants to talk to me and also wants to listen to me, because I don't always get that, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I'm hearing you. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
All right. Was that all for the flower?
Yes, that is, yeah. Probably all at this particular stage. Yeah, it's really strange that you haven't got any leaves there. You just don't need that guidance, that's for sure. Background, we looked at I've talked about the history of the magnolia. Is like I said, it flowers first and then brings through all the leaves. So it's all about getting your goal first before you're getting any other understanding of it. And I would say, because it's your happiness flowers, really feeling it and saying, oh, okay, I feel happy. May not last, but it will keep coming back. And once you start to acknowledge it, you'll acknowledge it each time it comes through then, and you'll notice it more and more often. So, yeah, so I what else? That's all I'm picking up at the moment.
Okay, yeah. Well, the leaves one, I that kind of makes sense, you know, not the guidance or anything like that, because – if you talk to my mom, she always talks about how even from a really young age, I was just very independent. I didn't like rely on people. She talked about how, you know, the first day of school, some kids like kind of cling to their parents. They don't want to leave their parents and they just don't want to go to school. And she always tells the story of how I didn't even hold her hand. I was just like ready to go. And I just like ran into school. And it's very like indicative of who I am. And if I am curious about something, I'll just go for it. And I'm not really scared, intimidated to do things on my own or for myself. And so that, it kind of makes sense why there aren't any leaves. Even though I do get like social anxiety, but I still, you know, find a way to get myself to, you know, to that event and make it through.
Yes. Yeah, you do. And you do it well.
Thank you.
You do. Yeah. You don't realize how well you do that, but yes, you do that very well.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you doing this flower reading. I know that you also provide this to other people, right?
Yes, yeah, I can do personal flower readings so that they can book that on my website. I like them to make sure they're, you know, focusing on a goal of some sort. But the other thing, which is more of my passion, is I like to teach people how to do it. So I have online courses. Oh, okay. and you can learn how to do it. And even the book, Intuitive Flowers, Empowering Your Emotional Goals, that is basically the courses. You know, you just got to read it. You don't get all the extra little bits and pieces of me talking and carrying on like you do in the course. But you do you can get it from the book as well, and it's all in there. But one of the courses I have, because there's three different types of flower readings. There's live flower readings where you actually pick a flower and then, you know, you hand it over and you do a reading on it. there's flower images, which is what we've just done there. So you've created that flower image, you've sent it to me, and you can do a reading on it. And when I do the readings, I do it in written format and on videos as well, so you get both. And the third one is what I do with workshops, and they actually paint their flower. So I do a meditation. They get their understanding of their goal, and they don't know they're doing a flower. It's like a sip and paint, but they don't know what they're doing. So I give them a gentle meditation, and we talk about, we guide them through to their goals and everything else, and we plant that seed in their heart, and it becomes a flower. They then draw the flower. And I have a lot of them say, oh, I can only draw stick insects, you know, I can only draw stick figures. And so it doesn't matter what you draw, just start to do it. Pick your colours, do whatever you do. And we use watercolour pencils, so they do it in pencil and then we add the water and that to it. So they're doing a little bit of artwork and everything else. And then we start doing reading on it. And it is amazing what comes up, because they've used not only their intuition to think of their flower, they've used their intuition to draw it. And one lady said she had a pink hibiscus was what she was thinking of, and she drew a yellow sunflower.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. And then had such a different understanding to it, a better reading and a better knowledge of it. It made a lot more sense to her. It's what she needed to do there and then. So when they do that, and then we do the reading and we get an understanding of it. So and that comes with a workbook, and they can write it all out so they get an understanding of what it is, and that becomes then their goal, and they can put that up on their wall, and every time they look at it, they know what they need to do and how to achieve it. So there's three different types of flower readings, and the basic one is your live flower readings, but it's also, I don't know if it's the hardest. I don't find it's the hardest, but when you're starting out, it can be the hardest, because, you know, you're holding on to this flower and you're trying to read the essence of the flower, but you've still got the visual that you can learn. And that's what I focus on, the visual, get the understanding of the visual, because the other information will come through.
That's amazing. That sounds like so much fun, doing the sip and paint.
Yes, the workshops are great.
Is that in person or is that virtual?
Well, I'm doing them in person now, but I haven't done one for a little while, but I can do group ones where we can do it online. So what I like to do with those is that, you know, we get a group of people, but I send the packs to you. So say you had three or four of your friends and they were doing it in their own homes, I would send the packs to each of them, and then they've got all the right gear. When I first did it, they just used their own pencils at home with their own paper, and you can't see the images properly when you're putting them on the video. So I'm going, huh, what's that one? So now I send the pack. So it's a little bit dearer because I have to send it all to you, but you get a big thing of watercolour pad. You get all your pencils and you get your brushes, so you get all that and the printout and everything that comes with it. So I post that to you. So we've got to do it, make sure we do it well in advance, because I post it all to you, and then we've got it all together and we go, okay, let's set the date. We're going to do it on this date. So you can do it as a group with all your friends, or I'm even thinking of doing some individual ones too, but I haven't got around there yet.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering because, you know, I'm, you know, in the States and you're in Australia. And so I'm just thinking of, like, you know, the listeners, if it's something they can do if they're not necessarily in Australia.
Well, I would suggest if they wanted to jump on my website, which is intuitivenature.com.au. You've got to use the Australian AU at the end, or the Art of Intuition, it goes the same one, .com.au. I would suggest that they contact me and just sort of go, I'm interested in doing a virtual event, because once I've got a couple of them, I can then start to put it into place, and I can do that. But I've got a few workshops coming up. So, yeah, got plenty of paper and plenty of, you know, pencils to send them, watercolour pencils and brushes, so we could send them out there and we could do one. I'd do it just like here. It'd be great. And we'd be, okay, what's your picture? And we'd be going, ooh, 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 ooh.
How fun. I love that. Yeah, I'll make sure to put your website in the show notes so people can, you know, click on it and check it out.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah.
No problem. All right. So I know we've gone over an hour. So is there any like last minute things you want to tell the audience? I know we already talked about your website, but you know, any last things?
No, I can't think of any. Just jump on the website if you want to know anything there. Oh, I do free flower readings. Okay. I do free flower readings, and it's called Intuitive Personal Development with Susan Jane, and it's on Facebook. So I do that once a week.
Is that on your website as well? Can they find that, the link to the, or is it a Facebook group?
It is a Facebook group, and I can do that. I haven't got it on there. I think I've got a Facebook link, but I don't think it's to the group. But I can put that on there, actually. I will do that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if they meet up, if they go through that way, through the Facebook way, then they can get free flow and just have a test to see if they like it.
All right, perfect. That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a really great conversation, and I'm glad I got to have my flower reading. And it was really interesting because the whole time you were talking about, I was like thinking of all the different scenarios of my life, of how it's like connected. And I was like, wow, that's interesting that, you know, I picked this specific flower and it's saying all these things are very, you know, in tune to me.
Yes, it is. It just spins me out too. I do these workshops and I still go, wow, you know, and like I said, that lady that had pink and then drew with yellow, it was like, and she had five distinct, you know, images. And I went, well, those five things are what you need to attract because they're your petals. And, you know, what is it that you want to attract? And because hers was a relationship goal, and she goes, oh, I want somebody who's honest, and I want somebody who's this, and I want somebody who's that. And I said, well, you know now that you have to be like that to attract the right people, because like attracts like. Oh, is that why I used yellow? Is that why I did that? So it's really, it just spins you out. You know, nothing's wrong, and it's where you are at the moment.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, for the audience sake, like we don't know each other personally. So.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I've had no idea. Actually, when we talked, when you first interviewed me or talked to me to see if I was okay to come on the show, your video wasn't working. So I didn't even know what you looked like.
Oh, right. I forgot. My webcam wasn't working. That's true. So this is the first time you're even seeing me.
Yeah. So there you go.
How funny. All right. Well, thank you again for joining. I, you know, really loved this conversation.
Oh, I loved being on it. Thank you so much for having me on, Melissa.
Thanks for making it to the end. If you enjoy what you hear and want to stay up to date on the show, please follow me on Facebook and or on Instagram. You can also check out my website at thetalkativeintrovertpodcast.com. All the information will be on there as well as in the show notes. If you want to help support the show, please review and rate the podcast and share it with your friends and family. Thanks so much, and I'll talk to you guys in the next episode.